Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we've got a few interesting news stories, a review of The Fallout, which hits HBO Max this week, and our From the Outside In discussion topic, which is, what do you see as the future of TV and film? Where do we go from here? Let's get on with the show and find out. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello, gents.
And Troy Heinrichs.
What's up, my people?
What's up?
Quite assumptive, I don't know. I think I got it right. Of you to assume, bold of you to, I have this, all right, I give up.
You know what to say about assuming.
We don't know. She can't even get the word out.
I was going to say, bold of you to assume that we are your people, but I just could not get there.
I was talking to everybody else listening. I don't care about you three.
Oh, okay.
No, I care about Amanda's predicament because she just she was an Android user and now she switched into Apple.
My brain's fried
for some reason, and I'm trying to see how is this going, because this is fascinating for me. Fascinating drama to go from
one.
It's
not going.
To the other. Do you wish you would have bought an Android right now?
I mean, I really just wish that this Move iOS app would work, and then I'd be fine. I got the phone to work, but I can't transfer anything over because the stupid app they developed to do so does not seem to be working. I just keep getting after hours upon hours transfer error. Okay, thanks for all the details, Apple.
I mean, that's why Droid does, right?
What was the deciding factor? Why did you make the move?
I mean, there were a few things. It was the thing that started all of this is because Twitter put a stupid sponsored post from Apple, and it was like how you can make a movie with the phone. And
really?
I was like, that's really cool.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the next Steven Spielberg with my phone.
Nope. But didn't Soderbergh do a movie like that where he did it all on his phone?
He sure did, and no one saw it. Yep.
It was good. I liked it. Anyhow, I'm not him.
Relax.
But yeah.
Unsane.
Plus, I'm always left out in the conversations.
It's a great feature. I used it on Saturday night when they went to line up for a field goal in the Packer game, and it went in focus, and then all of a sudden it went out of focus as the thing was blocked. So
I think that's probably the way you want to watch that, right?
But the cinematic mode on the phone is pretty amazing. It's pretty, you can do some really cool creative stuff with it.
So should we make some movies then?
Quite impressed. We could.
And I can do like sound effects from Police Academy style.
There you go. So if you want to sign up at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, we'll be sure to put an iPhone type film together for you. It'll be a short, like 3 to 7 minutes tops.
How long can I recall dialogue for? That's really the trick. I mean...
Okay, 2 minutes.
Yeah, I did about 2 minutes. When we made the movie,
4 minutes if we can do some Eminem lyrics.
For Paranoia tapes, we actually had boards in front of us so we could remember the dialogue, and I was trying to ad-lib most of it. And my brother, who was directing it, was very, just stick to the script. I'm like, I don't know. That just means I have to memorize it. How about I ad-lib instead? That's honestly what I think ad-libbing is. It's for people that can't memorize.
He just had one job.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. All right, well, let's get into the actual show, and we're going to do a couple things a little different, or actually kind of go back to some of the older ways, which, you know, for the last year, John, how long have we been doing News Roundup? Amanda, John, either one?
I would say about a year and a half.
Year and a half? Okay.
A while, yeah.
And before that, we basically just found news items that were interesting to talk about, and I think we're going to go back to that, just because News Roundup, you know, it ran its course. What say you guys?
I really like the News Roundup.
Yeah, I like the rundown of like all the big stories.
That's cool.
Yeah,
because we're skipping it.
Like it, which is funny because like when we made the switch from the old style to the News Roundup, I'm like, you know, I really like the old style better. But then I just started to get into the groove of the News Roundup because it was like, all right, well, here's some cool ideas. We can pick and choose what we want to talk about. This is kind of awesome.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I already did a format this way.
Yeah, the question is really, what do the listeners think? So, what do we do it this way? And then you get a vote and a poll in the group.
There you go. Do you like it more focused, or do you like it more rounded or wide open? Broad.
Broad or narrow?
Huh?
Broad or narrow?
I thought you said habanero.
Not women.
And I got very angry.
I think both ways are the same. I think this new way that we're going to do in about an hour when we finally get there is going to be more more exclusive, where the other way is more inclusive because you have more stories.
Oh dear God! Now you're just trying to cancel me or something. That's what I heard. All right, well, here's
trying to drag this out as long as possible.
Yeah, let's get into our movie and TV discussion.
55 minutes later.
Damn it, man! So a pair of fans are apparently suing a studio because Ana de Armas was in the trailer for 2019's Yesterday, but doesn't appear in the movie that they rented for $3.99. They're suing for $5 million. Anyway, that lawsuit notwithstanding, I want to discuss if it should be considered deceptive and misleading advertising when scenes from a trailer never appear in the movie itself.
I no. mean...
Go ahead.
I hope Sorry. So. Her name's right there.
I mean, if we're being honest, I would be upset if I thought that Ana de Armas was in a movie and then she didn't show up. I do get the concept of don't put something in the trailer if it's not going to show up in the film, because I think we've all had that where we've seen the trailer and we're like, oh, that looks really cool.
All the time.
You see the movie and then it never happens. It just ended up on the cutting room floor. The unfortunate part is that this is part of making movies. You know, if you want a trailer to get you excited early enough in advance, they're not going to have the entire film cut and put all the way through production ready to go, or post-production ready to go. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little frivolous to do a lawsuit over this.
$5 million. I mean, they really, really wanted to see Ana de Armas. And I'm like, if you want to see her that bad, go watch Knock Knock. Don't watch Yesterday. I'm just saying.
Well, you never know. Maybe it was a really great performance from her in Yesterday. We'll never know, Aaron. We're never going to know.
I was fine.
We want the director's cut of that one.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea that they're kind of being held accountable to some degree, but I mean, $5 million is a little ridiculous, but I do agree. I'm tired of seeing trailers with scenes that aren't there, because there are times where I am sold on things and then I go and I see it and I don't see that scene there. It's happened several times and I find it frustrating. I don't think that's necessarily right or fair. You know, if you saw an ad for Doritos and it was nacho cheese and then you bought nacho cheese, but they had Cool Ranch in the bag, you'd be pissed, right?
Oh, totally.
That was Cool Ranch is an garbage. Interesting analogy.
I think that's different though. I mean, clearly that's a production issue.
I seem to remember back when Infinity War and when Endgame were coming out, there are scenes they digitally removed people from the trailer, or they switched up who was in the trailer. Like, where instead of it being the Hulkbuster, they put the Hulk in the trailer, where in the actual movie it was the Hulkbuster that was in the scene. So it's just more or less the same thing, but, you know, kind of different. They're purposely trying to deceive people on that. However, I don't know. I find the whole lawsuit in itself a little frivolous, and especially for the amount of money that
a little.
And I know it's a class action suit, which means that everyone who jumps onto that gets to get a piece of it.
There's two people.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. Maybe I'll sign up. I saw the movie. I'm a little bummed.
Well, I mean, I would love to see Ana more often too. So
go watch Knock Knock. There's as much Ana as you want in that movie, and then you'll be done, and you don't need it anymore. $4 is all they paid for the rental. Just refund the. You don't need to sue for 5 months. People are stupid. That's just dumb. But I do agree. Well, I think trailers the challenge is should
you
not
can't
have
find
clips.
The person at Amazon to talk to get your $4 back.
So you sue for $5 million. That's your answer.
Yeah,
Troy just knows how to stick it to the man.
I mean, I don't agree with it either. I mean, I think it's dumb because, like. Well, it was 10 seconds she was in the trailer, and for, what was it, 5 of those 10 seconds, you see her backside, so you don't even know it's her. So it's just like, no, no.
Wait,
you know,
how
I
much
bet
of her backside?
Super pervy people that probably, yeah, there you go.
5 seconds of the 10 seconds.
You're missing the point.
You have problems.
I got your point. The thing that is important here is that Ana de Armas is not one of the main characters of the film. She's not listed in the things where they say, and starring, you know, Shaggy Patel, and starring, you know, Lily James. I forgot what Patel's first name is. That's why I just called him Shaggy, because he looks shaggy in the movie until he gets cleaned up later on. It's a really great movie. I think Aaron kind of
enjoy digging
it earlier,
yourself out of that. That'll be fun.
But she's not like if her name was at the end, then yeah, you have every right to complain about it and maybe sue for false advertising. But since her name's not in the trailer, it doesn't matter.
But my overall question isn't about Ana de Armas. It's should trailers be allowed to have clips from movies that aren't actually in the movie you're watching? And Jonathan Wright, like Spider-Man just did that too, where they digitally remove certain characters so you weren't spoiled about some stuff, which I kind of get that because you're still getting the scene and you'll just get more of the scene when you see it. But if you get some kind of great visual and it's not in the movie you go to see, I do think there's something to be said for that, that's not fair.
But it's the way of the business. I have frames 25 through 75 filmed, and of frames 25 to 75, we're going to use 50 to 75 to cut the trailer. And now we have to cut 50 to 75 because we need to put 25 to 50 into the movie because somebody didn't like the way it was edited up top in the brass. I mean, it's just the way the business works.
Well, maybe they should be a little bit more careful when they're cutting the trailer together. Are you guys sure this is not going to be removed? No, it's a very pivotal plot point. Okay.
Well, that's the thing, is usually they're not pivotal plot points. They're just, there's, you know, usually some action or it's something that's fun. A lot of times it's a quippy line that we wish they would have kept in and we were waiting for. So I don't know. I mean, at the same time, what Troy is talking about, it's too difficult, in my opinion, and I'm not a Hollywood filmmaker, but...
Oh, you will be. You got that new Apple phone.
But I would imagine that if you have to have your marketing out there, and it's going to overlap with you still closing up on your post-production. So if you want to be able to properly market your film, you're going to have to do that before everything is completely closed up. So you might have something that's in the trailer that ends up on the floor of the cutting room, and you can't really do anything about that. I don't know. Should they just add a statement at the end of every trailer that just says, not everything represented here is guaranteed to be premiered in the film? Like, we have to edit things unless you want to have a 6-hour movie every single time?
That's what I should say. We have to edit things unless you want a 6-hour movie. I think that's what they should say.
Because that's ultimately what it's about.
And they're cutting the trailer to the music, right? There's a lot of these that are like,
oh, sure.
Like, right? And you're like, you land on the thing that matches the music. And it's like, you're filming it almost for the trailer. You're not filming it for the movie.
We will rock you. Well, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next one. This is kind of interesting. And it's, Amanda, don't make this about Tom Cruise. Okay. It's not about Tom Cruise.
He's going to be dead by the time the movie shows up because it's pushed out that far.
Oh, mean. All right. So Mission Impossible. I am not laughing about the prospect of anyone's demise. Mission Impossible 7 delayed its release from September 30th, 2022 until July 14th, 2023. And according to their statement, I'm reading their statement. I'm actually getting down to it. After thoughtful consideration, Paramount Pictures and Skydance have decided to postpone the release dates for Mission Impossible 7 and Mission Impossible 8 in response to delays due to the ongoing pandemic. The new release dates will be July 14th, 2023 and July 28th, 2024, respectively. We look forward to providing moviegoers with an unparalleled theatrical experience. Now, this has nothing to do with delay. There's been a bunch of them throughout the pandemic. But this is a good 8 months away, and I want to know, do you buy that this is actually pandemic-related, or is this just not a business move to get Mission Impossible back on a summer schedule?
I don't think it's really that much of a big – as much about getting Mission Impossible back on a summer schedule as it is possibly Paramount feeling a little tepid about putting a movie out in the theaters when it's still a little weird outside.
It's 9 months away, you know. Man. It's not – A little
it,
weird.
It might outside. Be 9 months away, but like, look at the last few months of movies and which ones True. Have done great and which ones have not done great.
IP ones. Franchise and IP ones have done great.
Specifically, Marvel ones.
Right. But franchise and IP ones. Scream did great. Like,
recognizable names.
Recognizable
names.
I'm
sure names. Jurassic World will do great branded, when we have it in June.
Branded IP. You don't see Batman. Ooh, they're in March and they're just fine on their date. You know, a lot of movies aren't moving.
Yeah, and I, you know, there's a lot of movies. Batman is a bigger name than Mission Impossible. Anything Marvel is a bigger name than Mission Impossible. Scream, okay,
that's
you
not
got
true.
Me on that one.
That's not true. Mission globally, Mission Impossible is a bigger brand than most of the recent Marvel movies.
Okay. My point is, I think it has a lot more to do with how weird the market has been towards movies in general that aren't massive Marvel movies or a massive DC movie or something to that effect. It might be them saying, okay, let's just pump the brakes and see what's going on or how everything starts to work out if people start going to go see more movies more often. That's where I think it's landing. I don't think it has nearly as much to do with let's make sure it's a summer movie, because I don't feel like summer movies matter as much anymore.
Yeah, it's everything to do with going to the summer. That's the only reason it is going in June and July, right around the 4th of July weekend. It is 100% to be a summer movie. Because if you come out in September, when everybody went back to college and everybody went back to school, you're not going to get as many people going to the movies, and especially going to the movies twice. Because if they like the movie, they're going to go a second time. Like, people went twice to go see Spider-Man. Some people went to see Ghostbusters twice. It's a big name property. It will do just fine. This is strictly a money play, hands down. Or because someone in the cast and crew got COVID and they can't do the movie and the filming on time.
I was thinking it was more along the lines of the optics of it. And there have been, I mean, you take Sundance Film Festival, for example, they changed their entire slate to virtual because of the pandemic. And I realize it's much sooner, but I don't foresee much being different between here and September. And I think a lot of it is about what is this signaling to the people who are part of your viewership, who are part of your audience. And it's such a controversial topic to have a movie premiere in, or have anything that draws in large crowds during the pandemic. So I feel like that's just a part of it. I'm sure they're also like, hey, summer would be a nice time to launch this, but I don't think it's significant enough between September of this year and summer of next year for it to make that much of a difference. However, what we should be talking about is how Tom Cruise's space movie is going to have, they're going to be in space filming this thing by 2024.
Yeah, that's fine. And we'll talk about that in a second. But
because that's crazy, right?
it's crazy. And it sounds just like what Tom Cruise would do. But so I just want to know. So you got two that think it's actually pandemic related and the other two that think it's totally, we want to move it to summer.
I'm because a mix of both.
I don't think Sundance is a fair comparison, because that was happening 2 weeks. It literally Sundance just happened. So they were in the heat of the Omicron, and summer is not going to be the same situation as it has been the past two summers.
Well, in Sundance, they're getting invited to come talk about the movies and see the movies. It's a conference.
Yeah.
Essentially. Right. So they're legally responsible for the attendees of the festival. If you're going to go see Mission Impossible, AMC might be at fault, or Regal might be at fault, because of the local theaters and how well they clean or don't clean or what have you. It has nothing to do with the studio and what date they picked to release the movie. If that was the case, we all would have gotten Omicron when we went to go see Spider-Man or Scream. And those did just fine.
I'm sure somebody's screaming at their radio going, it was because of that. Didn't you see, was it Saturday Night Live did a skit where fake Joe Biden blamed Spider-Man for all of this? It's pretty funny. All right. Well, speaking of the cruise missile, since Amanda brought it up, the world's first space-based entertainment studio and multi-purpose arena is set to launch in just 2 years' time. And that's been revealed as the studio behind the Tom Cruise space movie, where he's going to film in space, because apparently green screen can't make it look like space like every other movie. I don't know what the hell's going on with that. But the groundbreaking studio known as C1 comes from film producer duo Elena and Dmitry Lesnevsky, and their newly launched Space Entertainment Enterprise, which is SEE, and will dock at Axiom's world-first commercial space station, Axiom Station, which is connected to the International Space Station. So we are going to film movies in space because they don't want to use special effects, I guess. Are you guys excited about a space station?
Russian space station?
That's not a moon, that's for sure.
It's not a moon.
It looks like a moon in the picture.
Does anybody think we need this, or is excited about this, or is it kind of?
No, we don't need this. Thank you. No, we've invested billions of dollars into technology to make everything we do look as realistic as possible. And now, because Tom Cruise and Axiom whatever is like, hey, guys, What an idea. What if we just...
It's not just Tom Cruise just, that talked him in. It's not like he showed up and
said,
like,
and the company.
I need
and
to go to space for my next movie. I need to go to space.
But I guarantee you this was a part of it. They had to have had him on board. Otherwise, they're not going to care. And so he was sitting in a room with a bunch of executives and was like, guys, what if we just really do this, man? Like, I've always wanted to go to space. Every other rich person is going to space in their own little space thing, ship or whatever they're called, and yet here I am, Tom Cruise, not filming movies in space. Let's make this happen,
or whatever they're called.
so John's
my brain John's gonna hurts play, today.
John's gonna play CFO of Axiom. I'm gonna play CEO of Axiom, and it's gonna be something like this. Hey, John, what actor is crazy enough to actually film stuff in space himself without a stunt double?
Well. First, we have to talk about what kind of device we're going to use to get him to space. But I think to answer your first question, it's Tom Cruise. My question is, does anyone have a space dick to use? Because there aren't enough of those to just throw around.
I mean, that's what it was. It was literally guys in a room that were like, we built this billion-dollar thing and we can't use it unless we get an actor to be in it. So what's the one actor we're going to have to be? This is totally... Bash from Don't Look Up right here. This is exactly what it is.
Well, that doesn't bode well for us, but it bodes well for him.
Also, can you imagine the liability if something goes wrong out there? Like if a comet comes in and a piece of an asteroid or something hits the place where they're filming, where they're the production is happening.
Or they run out of Tang.
It's a whole new movie.
They just start rolling. That content they start, for real. They're,
yeah.
Are you rolling? Let's go.
You know, calling. Tom Cruise would be like, I'm going to go jump. Hey, I'm going to go jump on that asteroid. You got the camera rolling, right?
Give me the mic.
Is that
I'll
thumbs
go.
Up? I can't tell.
He's so involved in movies, he actually calls Bruce Willis and be like, remember that time you got rid of that one meteorite? How do you do that? Well, guys, I just want to let you know that that was fictional. That was a movie that I did with the Ben Affleck guy. How did you guys kill the asteroid? What'd you do?
How did you kill it?
It's not real, Tom. You can't kill an asteroid, Tom. Yes, you can. I'm Tom Cruise. Just tell me how to do it. He's that good.
And what about the timing of the story? That's the thing, right? It's like your Top Gun movie's coming out, and now people are like, this guy is crazy. Does it like deter from the Top Gun viewership?
No, this is totally how Tom Cruise is. He's always willing to take. He'll sell it as, I'll do anything to make a movie better. And I actually believe he believes that wholeheartedly. And I also think, you know, he's got every opportunity in the world and he wants to take full advantage of it. I don't blame him. I mean, you know, I don't want to go to space because I don't want to float away. That's how I figure it would end up. And I don't want to run out of tank. So I'll just stay here nice and comfy and I'll look at pictures of space and just assume it's true and they aren't faking me the whole time.
Hey, Tom Cruise, if you're listening, go watch Gravity and then you'll understand why you never want to go to space ever.
And if you look at those effects, you don't need to because it looked like it was there. I thought I was in space. Saw it in IMAX.
I thought I was in space.
Looked fantastic.
Also, yeah, I think the piece of this that we haven't talked about is how wild it is that they're talking about hosting sports and entertainment events there. Like not just filming things, like they're trying to make this an extension of Earth. Like we're going to just hang out here now.
What are you, hey, I don't know about this part. What are you talking about? I don't remember reading sports.
So yeah. So the company is actually going to be creating, and this is from a Collider article, the company will be creating a movie production studio, a streaming content studio, and a sports arena all in zero gravity. The module named CE1, which is SEE, will be built to be able to host films, sports, and other entertainment and artistic events. It will be attached to the Axiom Station, which is a commercial laboratory and residential infrastructure part of the International Space Station. Wow. What? This is ridiculous. This seems like it is a movie.
Yeah, we're going to get football players that do research on space travel now.
No, we're going to get remake this movie right. The Room edition finally made in space.
That would be kind of
the funny. Football just floating along.
It would be wild. Why do we need sports in space? Like there's not enough room here Find a golf course.
No, man, everything is going underneath the water because or getting set on fire because we've so destroyed funny. The planet. Did you not learn anything from Don't Look Up?
It's literally going to be the 100. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Great. That's working well. All right, so
this is joyous.
Let's segue to the last news story. 1983 is a Christmas Story is now getting a sequel underway with Peter Billingsley back as Ralphie. Once again, we have this nostalgia bomb of a sequel coming out of nowhere that I don't know if anybody really needs or wants, but we're getting it anyway. And I just kind of wonder, are you guys getting burned out on this nostalgia yet? I mean, or do you love this trend? Because we're getting a lot of it lately.
The nostalgia is great when it works, right? This doesn't work.
Well, you haven't seen it. Not to be fair. I mean, I'm not a fan of that movie.
It's called A Christmas Story Christmas. That's the name of the title of the movie. Whether it's a working title or not, I don't know. But that's what it's referred to in the articles. And I'm just like, that's a horrible title. And what are you going to do? You're going to basically do a ripoff now of 8-Bit, which was basically a ripoff of Christmas Story. It's just content we don't probably need. But I like the nostalgia where it makes sense. Like Ghostbusters made sense.
Yeah, I don't care about this at all. Don't need it.
Okay.
But that wasn't his question. His question was, do you like the nostalgia stuff?
Sure, but I don't care about this. So this isn't one of those times where nostalgia is a factor for me, where this is not a big enough thing to run on nostalgia. This is like, hey guys, what do we have on the back burner? Oh, all of those really cool, creative, innovative ideas from independent filmmakers. Yeah, screw all those. Let's go back to the vault and find something that people do really like, and let's just try to make something more of it. And half the people won't care because half the people don't even like the movie to begin with.
Half?
There's a lot of people who do not like this one.
It's become cool, then I like it. I started that trend. I'm just letting you know.
Okay, no, I don't know why you're proud of that.
So I don't, you know, as far as nostalgia, whether or not I'm tired of it or not, I don't know. I don't really care. If it's something that's, I don't want to be the person to be like, yo, I'm getting tired of nostalgia, and then some stupid thing that shows up that it reminds me of my childhood, like Godzilla, and then I have to go see it. And then I have to roll back everything I said about nostalgia just to be like, oh, never mind. I kind of like it. So I don't want to go on that route. What I do want to say is that I like the idea of Peter Billingsley coming back for this. I just wish I had a different director like Jon Favreau. I think Jon Favreau would be able to make this and take this story to the next level.
Well, they're friends.
That's just me.
They are friends because he and Vince Vaughn have worked. Peter Billingsley and Vince Vaughn have worked together on a lot of stuff before, and they're friends with Favreau as well. So maybe he can talk him into it before it ends up coming out.
I mean, it's going to be directed by the guy who did Christmas Chronicles, so I'm not like, it's not like it's going to be bad, more than likely.
Chronicle works only because of, what's his name again?
Aaron? Kurt Russell.
That guy.
Yeah. Merry Kurtzmas. Look, my question was more about the whole nostalgia thing than it was really about A Christmas Story, because I feel like we are getting so much of this right now. We just got Ghostbusters Afterlife. Spider-Man was a big nostalgia bomb. Scream. I mean, I think Scream had a great point where it was saying, like, that's how you do sequels now or reboots, is you have to bring back people from the original, put them in this new version, and kind of mix it all together. And it feels like that's what we are doing all over the place. That's the new version of reboot. And it's good to a degree because it reminds you of the past. Night Court's doing it. One of my favorite shows of all time. They're bringing John Larroquette back for that TV reboot. I mean, it's just, at some point, you're going to stop being nostalgic for stuff, I would think. That's all I'm saying.
I think we'll just be more selective of what we're nostalgic for, because I feel like for the past couple decades, at least one, where we've been focusing on this remake, reboot, re this, re that, re whatever. It's been exciting because it was stuff from our past and it was, you know, new and fresh and all of that. Now I think we're going to be getting to the point where it's like, okay, yeah, but also this thing. And it's also going to be competing with other nostalgia content. You know, like if Godzilla is coming out and then you got A Christmas Story, which one do you think most people are going to go to? Well, that's
Godzilla.
That's a dumb question.
Godzilla.
Both. They're going to go to both. I think you're underestimating the A Christmas Story audience. There's an audience for that movie that watches it 24 hours a day for whatever reason every year. And if you have that kind of audience, maybe it makes sense.
Where do you meet these people?
I've never met one.
It's called the internet. Well, have you heard of
Scott,
it?
Scott Clark used
24 hours a day, but maybe twice or three times that week during that 24-hour period.
I mean, everybody loves whatever Christmas movie they love. It's just that was always a weird one. Why does it need to be on 24 hours? People have this whole time, VCRs, DVD players, Blu-ray players, whatever. They don't need it on 24 hours a day. Just don't. It's so odd. It's so weird.
It's more just because people put it on the background as background noise.
True.
For their parties or whatever they're doing. And
it is something that's very
honestly, it's like people want to watch that movie because that movie's good. It's funny. Yeah. It's clever.
What movie is?
Christmas Story.
Oh, no, that's incorrect. No.
It's I'm none sitting of those here things. Like, that's debatable.
It is super quotable.
Okay.
Okay.
Back me up, John. You live in the freaking 10 feet of snow mountain out there.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started on that. I think it's super quotable. I think that people really enjoy it. I have some really great memories of watching it. I have not seen the movie in possibly 10 years since I really started hating Christmas. So, yeah, there we go.
Jeez. Way to take that down. All right. So, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. It's funny because half of what he was saying was really positive and like, we got to like more stuff. And then he ended with, by the way, I hate Christmas. Okay. thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. It's called The Hollywood Outsider. It's a closed group, so you got to look for it. Or we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Also, Patreon, if you want to support the show. It's independently funded. Therefore, all of the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. And there are a lot of bonuses you can get. There's Bad Movie Night is a bonus on there, which we have just spun off older episodes from that into its own feed. The Hollywood Outsider presents Bad Movie Night. So you can find that in your podcast feeds right now. White Chicks just dropped on there, if you've never heard that episode. And we have new episodes of Bad Movie Night every month, plus a bonus episode, certain tiers. So go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And before we move on, I do want to make a quick shout out to longtime listener and also supporter of The Hollywood Outsider, Tomas. I know he suffered a big loss in his family, and we just want to say we're thinking of you and sending good vibes and hugs. We've got one review this week, one spoiler-free review. It's from a movie that Amanda and I saw at South by Southwest called The Fallout. So that comes to HBO Max on January 27th. Here is our review of The Fallout. High schooler Aveda navigates the emotional fallout she experiences in the wake of a high school tragedy. Relationships with her friends, her family, and view of the world are forever altered. And it stars Jenny Ortega, who was on You. Remember her? She was on You.
I do.
Maddie Zegler, Niles Fitch, Will Ropp, Lumi Pollock, John Ortiz, Julie Bowen, and Shailene Woodley.
Which is so weird.
She was really good. She was a therapist.
I think
she's in what, two scenes? Two or three scenes?
Yeah, she has a minor role in it, but it was just so weird because she's now to the age where, oh, I guess it is believable that she could have a degree in psychology and be a therapist. And it's just like, man, what, how old does that make me?
Yeah, because you've got your degree, but you're not a therapist.
Yeah, so I'm not making that money. Get on that.
Shailene's making it happen. And she's going to marry one of them footballers.
Yeah.
I was encouraged by you and the fact that this won the jury prize at South By to watch The Fallout, because you were raving about this movie. And I'm like, well, I got to get it on my radar. So I did. And I will say the concept of a school shooting immediately was the reason why I was put off. I'm like, I don't know as a father and everything else, if I want to experience, I don't know if I want to go through that.
Yeah.
I really don't, because it's something that you already had to worry about as a parent. And I can't even imagine parents who have kids in high school right now. I mean, it just feels like, hey, well, we know the world is coming back to normal because we have shootings again, you know, and that's something that's terrifying. This is more about what happens to those kids after that happens, the PTSD, the trauma, but it does open with the school shooting without ever glorifying the violence,
right,
which I appreciated. You don't actually witness any of it. You just hear, even though you don't witness it, I was not ready for how emotionally impactful that initial opening was.
It was really intense because they're giving you the reaction of people who are unaware of what's going on. They're in another room. They're trying to hide out. You don't know if they're going to be next. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how many shooters there are, you know, what their intentions are. So you really have as little information as people in the school who are victims of a school shooting that they typically have, which is zero information and just terror. And you're put in that position with them as close as you could ever be through entertainment media to get in an understanding as to what they're going through emotionally and physically too, I think to a good degree. But I think to your point, it's really about how trauma affects relationships, how it affects you as an individual and changes you so much. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, when they see people, like kids who are acting out and they're just like, oh, that's a bad kid. They're behaving poorly or whatever. There's not a second thought given as to why they're acting that way. What is going on with them that's leading them to that place? And so I feel
kind of what I was talking about earlier.
You know, yeah.
The whole empathy factor.
Yeah. And it's definitely a theme in the films this year. And I really appreciated that you could, that they were trying to make that known. Like, yeah, kids can sometimes be unruly and they can sometimes act out and do bad stuff that you maybe don't expect them to do, especially if it's your kid. You never expect them to do stuff that you tell them not to do. And then they do it and you're like, wait, what? You want me to just accept that? And this is really about sometimes they do that because they're trying to figure out how to cope themselves with their own grief. Mm-hmm. And the trauma from something like this is unparalleled, I feel like. There's not a lot of, in many ways, with many mental illnesses or diseases, you can relate to other people. You can find so many people who have experienced that, and you can have a conversation with them. The sad reality is a lot of the people who experience this, which we do have a lot of school shootings, so there's a lot of victims of it.
There's more every year, sadly.
Yeah. But the sad reality, too, is a lot of those people are dead, so you can't talk to them about it. And especially if you weren't, in this case, you weren't eye to eye with the shooter, I'll say. Mm-hmm. That, I feel like, has an even deeper impact because you don't know what everybody else was feeling. You don't know what happened to all of your friends. You don't know who's in the immediate aftermath. There's so much that takes a toll on you that us people who have not been in that position could never really comprehend or understand. And you also get a glimpse as to what the parents are feeling and trying to keep their family together and not, you know, suffocate their child. But also you are so damn worried every time they're, you know, not answering their phone for a minute or something, because you never know what's going to happen to them. And it could have been your child. And that's a horrible thing, that there is a moment of relief. So.
And the lead in this is Jenna Ortega, not Jenny, Jenna Ortega. And she really goes from a vivacious, lively teenage girl at the beginning to just someone who's desperate to feel anything. I would say she's easily the standout. Would you agree with that? Like she carries the movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I want to see her do anything and everything again. And I'll say that this also navigates people understanding their sexuality in a really beautiful way. I liked it.
All right. So what do you give The Fallout?
I gave it 750.
I gave it 750 as well. I think that's one that's probably going to catch some waves. And I think you're going to see that in a lot of places. I think it's going to get a big release, I hope. Now, before we move on to our From the Outside In topic, any recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't already talked about, guys?
I would just add one that was mentioned on last week's episode, but I'm just reminding because it is releasing this week on January 28th to Prime Video. Apparently, they don't want to be known as Amazon Prime Video. I'm just learning this. And that is The Legend of Vox Machina. If you want to learn more about my spoiler-free thoughts on this show coming to Prime Video, it is on thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Turns out I have a Peacock subscription. Didn't know I had one, but I kept on getting emails, and then I talked to somebody and they said, hey, you know, we do have a subscription for that. So I decided to go ahead and load it up and see what Peacock has, because I felt like I've been completely dry on things and I refuse to watch some of the things everyone's telling me I have to watch. So there's a show on Peacock that just dropped called Wolf Like Me. It stars Josh Gad and Isla Fisher. And I was going into it because I was like, oh, Josh Gad, Isla Fisher, it's going to be a comedy, of course. It's not. It's not at all a comedy. It's actually a very sweet kind of love story drama thing. And it has a twist to it that I don't want to give away, but it does. It becomes very evident really quickly in the show. And I finished the whole season over the weekend. It's 6 episodes. The episodes are anywhere between 30 minutes to 40 minutes. And it just left me with a nice smile on my face, a nice feel-good kind of family-ish show to watch. So that's Wolf Like Me on Peacock.
I picked up the musical Come From Away on Apple TV+. It's a Broadway musical shot Hamilton style. Come From Away is Canadian. It's a Canadian musical with book, music, and lyrics by Irene Sankoff and David Hine. It is set in the week following September 11th and tells the true story of what transpired when 38 planes were ordered to land unexpectedly at the Gander International Airport in the small town of Gander in the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, Canada, as part of Operation Yellow Ribbon. The characters in the musical are actually based on, and in most cases actually share the name of, real Gander residents, as well as some of the 7,000 stranded travelers that they actually housed and fed during the week after 9/11.
Wow. That sounds intense.
It's actually really, really good. The book and music are awesome. Aaron's going to hate it because it's actually just a videotape of the Broadway production. But the Broadway production that they did tape was the very first Broadway production of the Come From Away musical on Broadway when Broadway reopened after the pandemic. So it's actually nostalgic in that regard. It's kind of cool.
Aw.
Getting the theater reaction because it's the first time they've seen Broadway in whatever it was, 17 months.
All I watched was Ozark and I'm caught up and yeah, it was great. I can't wait for the second part to that. But Amanda talked about it last week, so no reason to go back there. But definitely watch it.
Woo!
And if you listen to this, February 4th is coming up. Keep an eye out for Reacher. Next week, we're going to have an interview with Reacher himself, Alan Ritson, and I'll give a series review, season one review on that very episode.
And apparently, Aaron is like his best friend now, or at least his publicist.
How do you figure?
Seems that way.
You were invited to moderate a round table of interviews or something, were you not? After one interaction with the man?
I mean, I think he likes me.
I hope things go well between you two.
We shouldn't be talking about that right now?
Well, I don't know. Is it on the DL?
I don't think so. I don't know. Thanks for writing it out, though, but I'm just going to assume that he likes me. Let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Now, our topic this week is, where do you see TV and movies going next? You know, the last couple weeks, we have had very, very detailed topics. We had to do a ton of research, and we had a plan, and we had to map a bunch of stuff out. We just wanted have an episode where it's a pretty open conversation and nobody has to prep. That's really what the goal here was. So we're going to talk about television and film. And we actually have some listener comments too, which are, some of them have some really good ideas for where they see the future of TV. And we always put the topic up in our podcast group on Facebook, as well as sometimes on Twitter as well. So let's start with TV. So what do you see as the future of TV? And remember, it's a discussion, no monologues. Let's just talk it out. Let's see if we can figure out what the future of television is going to be.
Okay, I have a crazy idea. It's not really that crazy. It's been something that's been building up in the tech world for a little while now. But I think the next advancement in the way of viewing television will be through augmented reality, where
VR,
like a HoloLens. No, not VR, but augmented reality, where you have like a HoloLens or some sort of apparatus over your glasses or whatever that will allow you to see everything past it, but also see whatever you want from a computer in front of your eyes.
Like Free Guy?
I think I get what you're talking about. Well, you'll see it, but you can also still observe your surroundings, right?
you can still observe your surroundings. It's what augmented reality is.
I guess it would kind of be like Free Guy. Like Free Guy.
Yeah, that sounds 100% like it. Yeah. He's got the glasses and you see like all the stuff.
When he puts the glasses on and everything, yes. Microsoft has had the HoloLens. They don't have anything consumer ready yet, but they've there's been a lot of labs using this where it's an actual computer, but it's a headset that you put on, and you can go as far as setting up a whole Minecraft on a table in front of you, where you can build a whole Minecraft like sandbox thing, and then you can jump into it if you wanted to, or like you can be staring at a wall and things would be knocked down, and all of a sudden you have a video game in front of you. They also have apps for Netflix and Amazon Prime, all of these, where you can actually put it up in front of you and then resize it to your needs and place it wherever you want to place it on your HUD, let's just call it. Imagine a whole world where people are walking through with funky glasses and they've got Netflix playing in the corner of their eye or something to that effect, where they're on the
driving
because
that's what I foresee.
Or driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen.
I mean, thank God I can finally catch up on my Netflix shows in the car on the highway.
Yeah. But that's what I think. I think that we'll see as far as technology goes. I think augmented reality is going to start becoming a much bigger thing for people once we start seeing more consumer level items start coming out.
I'm on the same angle as John, but a little bit different twist. I think, and this applies to both movies and TV. I personally feel like TV and movies are art, and therefore it's a personal interpretation. It's nice to go hang out like with friends to go to a movie. But like when you're watching the movie, you're watching the movie. You're not really talking to your friends. You're talking to your friends afterwards. You know, you might have like a TV watch party, but while you're watching the TV show until the commercial comes on, you're watching the TV show. So I think it's going to be more virtual reality. So you get the VR headset, you're immersed in the experience because you don't need to talk to your friends, and you actually get to be a character in whatever it is that's going on. So you're experiencing the movie. And it's kind of like, not that it's choose your own adventure, but every time I rewatch the movie or the TV show, I can look at it from a different vantage point. So I can see, you know, I could stand like as, you know, we'll pick on Grey's Anatomy, for example. So I could stand where Richard's standing and actually experience the dialogue and the characters from Richard's point of view. Or I could actually stand like in Miranda's spot and experience it from Miranda's point of view, just to get a more deeper appreciation of the characters and how like you'd get that emotional connection you feel when you do VR today. And then with the VR concept, because it's all part of the, you know, Oculus and PlayStation and whatever else, there would be that social community aspect where I could either pause the show or movie or what have you, or get a commercial break. And I could then pop over to a chat room where I could actually chat with other people that are in the same virtual experience, because you could almost do almost like a Second Life type of thing where there'd be other characters in there watching the show with you at the same time.
That's actually a really cool idea. It gets me thinking about the possibility of no longer is there like a specific lead to a show because you've picked who your lead is. So, you know, the first thing that pops in my mind is Supernatural. So instead of following around Sam and Dean everywhere they go, you can choose to follow Crowley around, or you can choose to follow God around, or whoever, whatever other character it is, and see what the story is from their points of view. Even those moments that are broken away from Sam and Dean, where it's just from like a whole different show entirely, because you're getting their motivations, you're getting every aspect of their life, you're getting all that just by following them around versus sticking with the main characters.
The only thing I would say with that is, I mean, I feel like in terms of gaming especially, you know, they've been saying VR is going to be a big thing forever, and it hasn't been. You know, I mean, it hasn't really connected with people. I think there's still some hindrance for most people to put that giant thing on their head. Now, if they can make it a little bit more, either what John's saying, like in terms of just being glasses, or they take a virtual reality set and somehow make it a lot less invasive, I could see that. But I can't see that happening until that's a factor, because that's just so, they're so clunky. I mean, they're so big, you know, I mean, even if you've got Oculus or you've got the one for PlayStation, I mean, those things they're fun for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, but to watch 2 hours on it, it gives me a headache. And I just don't see the world at large enjoying that as of yet. I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible, and we're talking about the future, so hey, I mean, great.
If they change the technology, I could see that, or like the functionality of those, because they are very, I mean, even just heavy alone. And I know some people with some big heads. I don't know that they would fit into those VR sets.
I mean, you definitely got to, you know, make it more accessible for everyone is probably what the trick is.
The bad side about VR, I feel like, is that I feel like every moron who shouldn't be doing VR is the moron that you see on the internet with VR, where they're doing something and all of a sudden they just put their hand through a TV or some plate glass window or something because they're scared or whatever it is they're chasing down.
That's a hard sell for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things where every time I see that, I'm like, you don't deserve VR. If you can't control your emotions enough to be like, this is still a video game, I don't need to be acting a fool. This is still a TV show or a movie. I don't need to be acting a fool and swinging at grandma while she's walking past me. You know, that's my biggest issue with VR right now.
Yeah, because The Void still is a company, but they had one that was the Star Trek experience, and it was at Disney. I think it was at the Venetian in Las Vegas. I did it in both places.
Yeah, and I did that. That was great.
Yeah. The experience was amazing. I mean, mm-hmm. you felt like you got shot by the stormtroopers when they actually did hit you, more because you moved into the bullet, not because they actually aimed well. And when like Vader comes out, like you actually feel like you're a little scared, actually. Like there's a little fear coming in there. And there was like a plank that you had to walk across with lava on each side. And it felt like you could fall off that walkway and you could feel the heat from the lava in that room in particular. So like those types of experiences, I think are really interesting that we could come up with for what the TV and movie of the future could look like.
And I think you said Star Trek and you meant Star Wars, by the way.
Star Wars. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, no, somebody's yelling at me, oh, you son of a bitch. Just want to make sure that's correct.
They're like, how could you insult Star Trek like that?
That's funny. Those are two big swings. So I like that. That would be kind of either one of them, if they would come to fruition to where it was more accessible to people, I think that would be really exciting. Because we need some kind of changing landscape, right, at some point. You know, mine aren't quite so sci-fi related. I've got a couple of them that I think really will apply. I think cable TV is going to die officially in the next 5 years, maybe. I don't think network TV will become dead just yet, because a lot of people still watch network TV. There's a lot of sports on it, local news, stuff like that. So I think you'll still have that. But I do believe cable is just going to accept its fate and become streaming services completely. You know, I feel like it's already going that way. I think we will continue to have individual streaming channels, but they're going to be, I mean, just looking at, you know, we were just talking about gaming, you know, Microsoft just bought, was it Activision, right?
Yeah. Activision Blizzard.
Massive acquisition. You've got Disney, who owns Hulu and ABC and a bunch of other stuff, ESPN. You know, you've got Warner Brothers, who's got HBO Max, and it's got a bunch of, you know, everybody owns multiple things. All these corporations have multiple things. So I think you're going to see a lot of super bundle packages, and we're going to end up back in the same place we were trying to get away from, where we are back to kind of cable. It's going to be a better version of cable, but it's going to be kind of cable.
It's not that nobody wanted cable. What people wanted was the ability to unsubscribe when the hell I want to unsubscribe.
Yep.
That's all they wanted. Yep. Like, don't lock me into the year. Don't lock me into the month to month. Don't charge me an arm and a leg because I didn't sign up for the year bundle. Just tell me what it costs, be fair, and let me unsubscribe in 30 days. That's what we really wanted.
And that's where we're at now. But I think because so many corporations are absorbing other channels, I think you're going to get, you'll say, it'll be just like when you had cable. You know, for 12 months, if you get all these channels, you'll save $20. And then you'll end up back, many people will end up back in the same boat that they were in when they had cable, is they had, you know, all the stuff that they don't watch. And I think we'll be back to that to some degree.
If you pay for Disney Plus for 3 years in advance, it'll only be $3 a month, equivocally.
Guilty. Guilty. God, that has not worked out financially for me. That's for sure. I also believe...
You still threw money away because you only watch one thing on
it. I do. I watch like one thing a month, and most of it is Bear Grylls. I believe we will start seeing... And this applies probably more to the lower tiered streaming channels. I think we're going to start seeing banner ads at the bottom for ones that where you have commercials, because, you know, we're paying extra to not have commercials on a lot of these things. I think for the lower tiered packages, you know, Peacock has, I think, don't they have like a free option where you do get commercials? IMDb has one on Amazon Prime where you get some commercials on that. I think you're going to start seeing banner ads run through the show as you watch them, much like when you watch a YouTube video or something.
That's going to be infuriating.
It's just that they're going to find a way to work advertising into it somehow. There's no way they don't have lower tiers where you have some kind of commercial, because that's where they're making money from. Like UVC.
Even on Peacock, if you're paying for the premium package, you're still going to run in the commercials. So it's not like how Hulu was doing it, that if you paid for no commercials, you'd only get a commercial at the beginning and the end. The premium package only really gives you access to live stuff like sports and whatnot. That's how I watched the Bucks game yesterday. Even Peacock, you know, for whatever I'm paying on that, is throwing commercials at me.
Wait, what sports thing did you watch yesterday?
You watched the basketball.
I watched the Bucks game.
Like the Milwaukee Bucks?
The San Francisco Bucks.
I'm just shocked.
Is that basketball, like, right?
Bucks. So am I.
You're a Bucks fan.
Is that basketball?
Yeah, NBA.
It's basketball. it's football. I watched the football game.
Tampa Bay Bucks.
Tampa Bay Bucks.
There was a freaking basketball league. I would watch that so much. I really would.
Just to start loading up on insults, you know, just to like, oh, that's a good one. I could try that someday.
God, I still can't understand why they would hear an insult and then completely throw the ball the wrong way. I'm like, what? How? I don't understand how that works. Like, you're so hurt, your arm just reacts by going right. I don't understand. Like, doesn't make any sense. I've never been that insulted where my body twitched a certain way. Just never have. I've never had an impulse reaction to an insult. More like, that was a good one, or you're a jackass. It's always one of those two reactions. I never threw a ball the wrong way. And then also my last portion to what I think the future of TV is going to be is, I think, and this is kind of similar to what Trey was talking to, but I think it's going to be more interactive, and I think you're going to start seeing TV shows that are very much like Black Mirror had that episode where it was interactive, and they've had several other, Bear Grylls had one on Netflix where it was interactive. I think you're going to get more of that. I don't think it's going to be common, but I think we'll get more of that where we get to interact with these things.
I think so too, as we've seen the success of them as well, because a lot of people had a lot of fun with it. And if you can, we've seen the success in the gaming industry of having some control over where the story goes.
Oh yeah.
I can't remember what the names of those games are off the top of my head right now, but
Telltale.
Hard Rain. Hard Rain was a great one.
That was another one. Not Hard Rain. Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain. Heavy Rain.
Hard Rain was a really bad Christian Slater movie.
But they're a lot of fun, and it's a way to engage your audience and tell multiple stories and feel like they're connected to it in a different way.
What about Chubby Rain?
Pornhub movie.
No.
Speaking of augmented reality, they know how to do that. They've been practicing that point of view thing for a long time.
Absolutely.
That's where John got the idea, by the way. Just so
it's from Bowfinger.
Sure it is. Sure it is, buddy.
I'm just going to go over here and be back by myself. Nobody's looking.
Amanda, what ideas do you have for the future of TV?
Well, I'm curious. I would like to see us. I don't know if it's that I think it will happen or what I would like to see, but I would like to see, now that we're shortening down some of these television seasons into 8 hours of content, 6 to 8 hours, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes right in there. I would like to see those go into the movie theater. So you have like one day where you can just basically binge watch the new season of Cobra Kai or whatever with all your friends at the theater.
At the theater?
Yeah. I mean,
that's badass.
You can do that right now for just one movie. But imagine if you could just pay like a few $100 between you and a group of your friends. And with the shorter season, you could easily do that in one day and you would have so much fun and the theaters would get lots of money concession wise. So I feel like it'd be a win-win for everyone.
I love that idea. Why didn't you guys think of something like that? You and your science fiction shit.
Because she jumped ahead. We're not on the movie part yet. That's the movie part.
That's TV. Right. That counts as...
She literally said it's a television show.
She got both in there. She worked them both in. Look at that. I like that. I want to wear some glasses and augmented reality and some virtual reality to go into that damn theater, watch Cobra Kai, and then breaks. I can pretend like I'm in something and I can punch a hole in the wall of the theater. I think we can combine all this stuff.
You could have like real karate lessons while watching it, and like an intermission or something.
I've got a gi. Let's go. Let's go. All right. What
about golf clap?
What about the future of movie. Or, I'm sorry, Amanda, did you have anything else for TV? I didn't mean to. Okay.
No, I feel like my idea was pretty solid. I should stop there.
I think it's great. You stop while you're ahead. And really, somebody should run somewhere and sell that. So what do you think is the future of movies? And that includes streaming, theaters, seating, whatever, wherever you want to go with it. Troy.
The biggest impact I see with theater.
Troy's first.
I'm thinking, I mean, other than the VR thing.
Oh, well, then Amanda, really you can go.
Huh? Additional.
Come back to Troy. Go ahead, Amanda. Amanda, go ahead.
We've seen long before the pandemic that the movie theater industry was struggling to retain people the way that it used to. And so if they are going to stay alive, I think, A, they're going to have to resort to alternatives, not just movies. Again, that goes back to the television concept. But I think one of the things that we're going to start to see is those bigger blockbusters are really going to be the primary reason people are going to the theaters. And all of our indie filmmakers are just going to be connecting with streamers to get those films at home. And so our theater experience is going to be very, very different. We're going to have to get comfortable with watching some of these smaller films on our smaller TV at home. But then we can have the larger events where you go with groups of people to the theater. So if it's binging an entire season of a show, if it's watching a football game, if it's, you know, the Super Bowl, whatever it is, theaters are that.
Yeah,
it's a great way to connect with a big group of people and still feel like you have your own space. So I feel like that's where we're going to start to see the trajectory go for theaters. I don't think they're going to die. I think they're just going to have to shift what their offerings are. And the big blockbusters are never going to go away for movie theaters. People love to go in hordes of people to go to the theater. We saw that with Spider-Man. So that'll be fine, I think.
I don't understand for the life of me why they haven't already started doing that with the Super Bowl and stuff like that. Why they don't have playoff games. I mean, they're huge. Not everybody drinks. Not everybody wants to go to a bar to watch it. Nobody. I mean, they're not smoky anymore, but they're still, I mean, they're drunks and, you know, there's that gets old after a while. You know, I would love to go to a movie theater and watch the playoffs. I really would. I would have a fantastic time with that. I don't have to deal with drunk people. You can still get alcohol if you really got to have some, but I can also get a refill on my, you know, Jumbotron Diet Coke and eat popcorn for the whole thing or get whatever other snacks they have. I think that is just a totally missed opportunity. And those games are usually in the afternoon for a lot of them. So, you know, if there's no big movies out, they're not really selling tickets, at least in a theater or two. Why wouldn't you?
Right. Yeah, it's prime time.
Type in the broadcast, right? Get a live feed from the stadium. And get the stadium experience so that you're like, yeah, and it's another Packers first down, you know, and then you can like cheer and be loud in the state in the theater, just like you would be if you were at the game, you know, because that's the part of the thing that people are missing.
Somewhat better so that you can just get rid of the whole commercial bit. Cause that's one of the annoying things about football games is the commercials. But it is a brilliant idea. I do love this idea of movie theaters because it's really that's. When I was trying to think about things that would make or change the movie industry moving forward, I kept on running into, well, it doesn't really matter because like movie theaters and the companies that manage those movie theaters have such a stranglehold over the industry that they have to get on board first. But, you know, starting from there, if they opened up their offerings so much more, like one of my favorite movie experiences is to be able to go to one of those eatery theaters where you can sit down, have a great meal, have a couple of drinks. Every time I would go to one of those theaters, it would always be with a big group of friends and we'd hang out in the bar either before and after or both, and just be able to enjoy each other's company. Like that, like making it more of a social experience in such a antisocial world that we're living in at the moment, it would be so much more advantageous for them.
And to speak to that, and I know we've kind of talked about it before, but I think they should add two theaters, talking screenings.
Huh?
Yeah, wasn't that played with for a little while?
I don't think, like a couple years ago? They talked about it. No theaters really did it. I think there should be specific showings that allow talking or texting or whatever, that allow social interaction, like a social interaction screening. And it's very, very clear which ones those are. Because I feel like there is a group of people, and it's probably more the younger generation, you know, not the old time us, but there's many of the younger generation that are very, very self-involved and can't put their phone down for 27 seconds. I think they would probably like that, where they're open to talk to their friends. And, you know, some people really do enjoy just talking to people next to them or getting loud in a theater or getting really, really rambunctious or making jokes and that sort of thing. And if you're into that, like that sounds like the worst thing in the world to me, right? Just sounds like an absolute nightmare fuel. I don't want anything to do with it. But there's a lot of people that I think would. And if you allowed that, or even if you have a social interaction screen where, hey, you can use your phone as long as you keep the brightness down, that sort of thing, then people that just can't get away from their phone because they're addicted to it, then they can at least, they have a screening where they can go in and it doesn't affect those of us that don't want anything to do with it. So then you kind of, everybody wins.
When you bring up people being addicted to their phones, not able to move from it, one thing that comes to my mind is, A, some people do just like to be chatty Cathys and they want to talk about everything that's happening on screen. That's totally fine. I can get like that with certain people. I try not to, but you know, I don't know. It just depends on the vibe with the person. But there may be an opportunity too for people to see a movie with their friends in different places. Like John is in Florida. Well, John is in North Carolina and we're in Northern Illinois and Troy is in Chicago. And so if we were to all want to go see a movie together and like chat about it, Aaron would never do this, but that would be an opportunity where a social interaction screening could be fun because you could text throughout it and be like, oh my God, this scared the crap out of me. So you're kind of watching it with your friends, but not because they don't live near you. So that could be fun.
And I think there's probably a lot of people that aren't part of our generation or that really would probably like that, especially younger people. You know, maybe you tailor it for certain kinds of movies, but, and you make it very, very clear. This is a social interaction screening. This is acceptable here. Just make sure, you know, you still got some kind of respectable norms, like keep the brightness down and that sort of thing. And I think you'll find people that would really have a blast or they can go, you know, everybody's got that friend or aunt or cousin or uncle or whatever that talks through the frickin' movie, no matter what you see. Then they can go and they can go ahead and be annoying as hell to someone else, not you.
I totally grasp it because like, we had the Netflix watch party during the pandemic, right? That was a thing where you spit up Netflix and chat with all the people you want to chat with.
That was fun. For me, times we did it.
I don't think it works for me. Like I think like we have right now. I'm doing a This Is Us final season watch party on Wednesday nights at my house, and yeah, like there's some people that kind of snortle or chuckle or whatever.
Hey, we did it during Game of Thrones. What's the difference, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I like to either wait for the commercial breaks or talk about it at the end. Like, talk about it while it's airing is distracting. So it's like to see that chat message moving on the side for the Netflix watch party. For me, you know, I'm, you know, get off my lawn, whatever. Like, that's like distracting. Like, I want to watch the content and the art and then be moved by the art and be immersed by the art and then have the conversation later. But yeah, for those people that want to do that, then yeah, make a separate screening for them. It's no different than this screening is subtitled and this, or, you know, this screening's not, or this screening has closed captions and this screening doesn't. This screening allows phones.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I gotcha. Okay. So I had a couple that I want to mention. So I think in terms of movies on streaming services, I think we're going to see a lot less movies on streaming services as we go in the next few years. And it's going to be more limited series instead. I really feel like that's where the storytelling seems to be headed.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of movies. And, you know, I think movies are actually going to be less and less, which saddens me, but, you know, people go where the content is. I also think in terms of theaters, you're going to get a lot more 4D theaters popping up because those seem to be popular wherever they are. That's where you have the immersive experience where you've got blowing machines on you and water falling on you. Like they're just all immersive experiences and people seem to love them. I've only done it once and it was kind of crazy. I had a great time, so I'm not knocking it, but that seems to be the next trendy kind of theater that's coming. Kind of like, you know, John, you were talking about the food and dining experience theaters. That's the same kind of thing. Like it's a trendy item. I don't think they're going to be in every neighborhood, but I think you'll see more of them in popular areas. And then I feel like this is painfully obvious, but we're going to have even more IP-focused theatrical releases where everything or the majority of what you see in a theater is going to be more decided by IP, established IP, so intellectual property, for those that don't know. So if it's already a brand, if it's already a name, or if it's been a name in the past, then I think you're going to see it go to the theater. Otherwise, better odds that it goes to a streaming service of some sort.
I think that movies are going to go the way of music. in a couple of different ways that this is going to happen. One is because we're no longer locked into the movie theater experience. We can release day and date if we want to. We can bring it to streaming services. We can bring it to download only on certain devices, or lock them to certain devices, only iPhones, only Androids, what have you. I think that the one thing that's going to change is how we tell stories. More close-up shots, more intimate shots. We're not going to have such the wide vistas, because when I think about making my movie now, I have to think about what does it look like not only on the large screen, but I also have to think about what it looks like on the small screen, because there are people that are going to just watch it on their iPhone. That's the only device they own. You know, college kids, what have you, they're going to watch it where they need, they're going to want to watch it. I think so. The medium of how we do movies and how we tell stories, I think that's going to change in the future. The other thing that I think is really going to change is, I totally forgot what my second point was, so never mind. I pulled John.
He'll tell us in the future.
He'll tell us when we get there.
Right.
I knew that. That was the whole thing the whole time. I tried to tell you guys back in 2022.
Do you remember that point? I told you that I'd tell you in the future.
Totally told you that future point.
Now. It's going to be exactly what it is. And we're going to be like, right. Yeah, I think you did. Shh, you're right.
Oh, the music tie-in. Yes. I think that you're going to see, like, as we're talking about at the start of the show with Amanda buying her phone, like the cinematic mode on the iPhone, I think you're going to see, you know, a lot of movies being told, a lot of really great stories that never ever get seen because it's controlled by the big production houses. I think you're going to start to see, as we get this consolidation of, like Aaron was talking about, like Warner Brothers owns everything, Disney owns everything. As that starts to happen, you're going to start to get to that monopoly point, and it's going to fracture again. And I think you're going to actually see a lot of independent content coming out, and then self-publishing comes out of that. So I can publish my movie to Spotify. I can publish my movie to Apple Music, whatever the movie version of that is. I think that's where you're going to see film go, is that you can get a lot more amateur movies, if you will, that could become professionally discovered, because you'll have a service that'll allow you to do that self-publishing.
I like that.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of leaning towards too, is that eventually, and it could be really soon, we'll start seeing some provider is going to become the home for self-published movies, so that you know, maybe they'll have a screening process, or maybe they'll make sure that the quality is right, you know, to make sure they're not putting up just about anything. But there will be a way to self-publish movies, which I think Amazon Prime allows you to self-publish movies, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, there are some people that you can get a movie made and you can publish it on Amazon, because I do know many people that do that, and then you can create your own DVD. But I think what Troy's trying to say is it'll be a much bigger and broader and available in different avenues, because, you know, once you get to everything's a monopoly, a lot of people are just going to want to do it themselves if they can.
Yeah, like we published podcasts today.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not taking away from what Troy was saying. I'm just saying that there's evidence that he could be possibly right, because you can
be possibly right. Not that he might be right.
Don't feed that ego.
Be possibly.
Don't feed the monster.
Nope.
Right. Well, I'm just saying that there's a high likelihood that he's going to end up being right when we get to that future point, and he doesn't have to tell us, oh, I was right, because there's a chance of it, because there's already evidence that's possible.
Yep.
And on one hand, I do believe that'd be very cool. You know, if you remember the movie Monsters, which was Gareth Edwards, I believe.
Yeah,
directed.
I remember
it.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. 100, like he had two actors and then a couple other people, and 100% process on his iMac laptop or whatever, the whole rest of the movie. He did it all by himself. The animation and all that was all him. So it's possible to do it, and it's possible to create something of great quality. So I'm just saying, Troy could possibly, maybe in the far, far, far future, be right.
I think we should make our own movie with Amanda's new camera. That's what we should do.
Right.
That's what the Patreon is for.
Whenever she finally gets it working.
No, we don't need Patreon. You got it. All you got to do. I mean, we need Patreon to help us write the script. We need to write a four-person. I'm going to write a four-person movie that we're going to star in. It'll be a Zoom movie. Because I don't want to hang out with anybody just yet. Just kidding. All right. You guys want to hear some listener thoughts on what the future of movie and television are?
Let's see if they're smarter than us.
Sure.
They probably are.
Dave McGraw, he's got a bunch of points. You know, Dave, he likes to write, but I'm going to surmise. One thing he says, I think Avatar 2 is going to be a game changer in how movies are made or presented. James Cameron has always been a driving force in new film technologies, and I think he is really going to wow us when this comes out. How exactly? I'm not 100% sure, but I do know from interviews a few years back that he has been working on a glassless 3D technology that would eliminate not only the glasses, but other issues usually associated with 3D, like the darkening screen. And I think, Troy, you kind of talked about this last week when you were talking about don't bet against James Cameron. Do you guys as a whole believe that it's possible he could do it yet again? I mean, he's not wrong. It's really hard to bet against James Cameron.
I mean, yeah. I mean, CG, like, no one ever thought, you know, Lux of the Lamp was ever going to move and actually evoke emotion at the same time. And then Pixar becomes what Pixar becomes. It always takes one thing, right? Like mm-hmm. Star Wars. No one ever thought George Lucas was going to make a space Nazi movie. You know, it's literally happens when you get lightning in a bottle. And so, yeah, could James Cameron do it with Avatar 2? Very possible. Could we get 3D without glasses? Very possible. There's awesome depth of field now. I just think The Good Dinosaur from Pixar, I mean, it had a huge depth of field. It just wasn't up in your face where it felt like it was depth of field. But any good space movie in IMAX or one of these 4K type theaters, like, it feels like it's in 3D, even though it's not.
That would be amazing. I hope it happens. Kyle Nolan says, sadly, I think we'll be getting more and more spinoffs of existing shows like the Chicago Channel, the NCIS Network, the Dick Wolf Channel, etc., and more revivals and reboots in both TV and movies. And then, what was it? Kyle Bennett, just to tack onto that, says he wonders when some things will become extinct, like network television. So I totally agree with Kyle. I think we are going to have, I mean, hell, John was just telling me there's a Dateline channel.
Yeah, that's what's great about Peacock. You can do nothing but Dateline all the time.
That just sounds so depressing. That's a good question.
One thing about Peacock that's great, though, is that they do put the content in a channel format. So if you want, like, this is the Christmas channel, this is the Office channel, this is the whatever channel, like, you can just dial in the channel and watch what you want to watch in that particular genre content versus here's the genre of sci-fi, and then I still have to pick what it is. I just want to put on sci-fi in the background and just let it run for the day. Like, that is one thing Peacock is definitely winning in.
Do you do that with Peacock?
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh,
I do.
All right.
But it's a decent service. Otherwise, it has a lot of the same stuff everybody else has.
Right. And Kyle's not wrong, because I pulled up Paramount Plus the other day and just typed in NCIS, and there was, like, every square on the screen was an NCIS show.
Yeah, and at one point, they were toying with a Yellowstone network. That's a true story. They were toying with a Yellowstone, because it's so popular right now, and it's, like, their most popular thing. Even their spinoffs are super popular. They were thinking, maybe we just do a Yellowstone channel. Of course you are. But I think that's put to the wayside. Now, a lot of other people had similar suggestions that we've already talked about. Like Ty Nelson mentioned, theaters will start getting more creative with programming, concerts, revival showing, sports events. Good point. Scott Calgaro had an interesting one. He thinks one of the next big things will be from a technical standpoint, will be holographic films. We already have the technology that exists with headsets and glasses, but there are some where you don't necessarily need, there's some technology where you don't necessarily need those items with real, so you can have real holograms. I mean, if they could make that technology happen, I think it's more likely that it would be more the James Cameron route where it's 3D and it just pops out of the screen. I don't know. Holograms would be kind of cool though. You know, we've seen it in sci-fi for decades.
I mean, that's really what augmented reality is. When John's talking about, like, playing Minecraft on a desk or something and you can interact with the environment, you're actually seeing the hologram, but you have to see it through the glasses.
Right, right.
Like, do that same technology, but do it without the glasses, just like doing 3D without the glasses. That's the breakthrough.
Becky Trumbo had one I feel very confident will probably happen. For TV, I think we'll see shorter options. Dummy's longest episode, I don't know the show, but Dummy's longest episode was 10 minutes. There's no commitment. I also think there will be more at-home interactive viewing options for films. Purchase a ticket for live chat viewing. It'll be super annoying for some people, but a huge draw for others, but it'd be a way to continue to charge for new releases. We kind of talked about the interactive portion. How about that? Shorter episodes. I mean, Cobra Kai kind of proved that people could really get invested in this shorter form programming. Do you think we could get down to where it's, I mean, a lot of people don't realize most sitcoms are already 20 minutes. They're not really longer than 20 minutes. So, I mean, do you think we could get down to 10, 15 minutes for an episode of something?
No, please don't.
I think we could, though.
We could. I don't want it.
Depending on what it is, yes.
The innovation is just tell the story and don't have to be contained to any time. It's contained to 22 minutes and 44 minutes because of the ad breaks and the 1 hour and a half hour programming slots on the network. if you don't have a network anymore and you can just release the content, just release the content. And if you want to say, hey, this is the end of Act 1 and this is the end of Act 2 and end of Act 3, then it's three episodes like BBC.
Sherlock was three episodes, yeah.
Yeah. You know, do it like that. Like, it doesn't matter, like, how many episodes or how much season or, like, Ozark could have just said season 4, 14 episodes, but instead they were like season 4, part 1 and part 2, or they could have just went season 4 and season 5. Like, who cares, right? It's just the new stuff. And however long it takes to tell the story.
The last one. This is from Susan Elizabeth. Deepfakes will be employed as an alternative to huge time commitments for actors and production crews.
That's an interesting one, for sure.
That is truth right there. And we already saw it.
When did we see it?
Rogue One?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess nobody's actually dead anymore. They'll just end up in a sitcom or something. They'll just come back.
Yep. We saw it, like Rogue One. Marvel did it a couple times. You know,
Fast and Furious. It's possible.
Fast and Furious.
Mandy, you said it's super interesting to you. You seem to get a little excited. What about that appeals to you?
I just hadn't thought about that as being commonplace. It's been used so satirically for the most of its purpose. I just hadn't thought of it as, I don't have time for this, but I'd love to be part of it. You have my rights or my authorization, my permission. Do what you want. And it's like, okay, we'll just throw you in there then. And it's like, I wasn't there at all, but here I am, right there.
All right, well, thanks, everybody. I think that was a really interesting topic. You know, we didn't get too jokey. We actually had a real conversation. Good job, everybody.
We get gold stars.
You do. You can put it on your fridge. We got one more thing to do, but before that, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider. We're on Twitter, @BuyPopcorn. Our website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. And if you are on a podcast app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever it is, please rate us. Leave us a review. Just use the stars. You don't have to write anything out. Just shoot 5 stars. That's all you got to do. It's like Uber. Helps us. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter @rjohndraws. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and @SinkIntoThis. Troy Heinrichs on The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld. Me on The Blacklist Exposed with Troy Heinrichs and presenting Hitchcock, and I'm @AaronSmirks. So there we go. Now, our game this week, we're actually stealing it from a listener, but I'm giving him credit. So Andreas, if you're listening, we stole it from you. So in our group all the time, Andreas plays this game where he finds a review, usually a bad review, but any kind of review, from someone on Letterboxd or Amazon Prime, and then reads it, basically gives us a review without the movie title in it, and sees if anybody can guess what the review is. So we're going to play that game. We're going to read an actual review and see if anybody can guess what the movie is. And we each have one. So Amanda, you go first.
All right, fellas. Do you really want to know why it didn't win the Oscar? Well, maybe because prior to the Academy Awards, we were bombarded with how great this film was. It was considered groundbreaking, controversial, etc., and it widely praised. Did it ever occur to anybody that it would turn off the Oscar voters? Of course it didn't. That would be too easy. You make a film and promote it so heavily that redacted fever became redacted annoyance. You just wanted to get away from all the hype. I hated seeing the signs on the London tubes and billboards everywhere. This film was not going to get me as it did others. I'm too strong for that. Just like Titanic, which I never saw, I got sick of hearing about how wonderful redacted is. I think Mad TV depicted a great sketch about it with two girls. One said, "I wish I could quit you, but my husband won't let me." And the other replied, "My husband drove me up here." The first replied, "My husband is over there." I have to say that I have never laughed so hard because that was the depth of the film itself. So, Redacted beat Redacted. Finally, a film inspired by life in Los Angeles for a change, set in Hollywood and filmed there. Who are the Hollywood Oscar voters? The people who work there, that's who. They didn't film Redacted in Vancouver because they could for cheaper, but anyway, who gets the last laugh? Now, if only I bet on Redacted in the first place. By the way, since I wrote this interview, I got a very negative email about my comment. Funny, I have written over 400 reviews for this site and this one came back. I won't delete this review because I think I have something important to say about the film itself. I don't care about the homosexuality. I am a liberal lefty feminist who does churches support gay rights to marry, adopt children, divorce, and equal rights to benefits. I am not homophobic in the least, and if you think I am, then I recommend reading some of my other reviews for Portrait of a Marriage and Paris Was a Woman.
Starting
just
to think
for
you
the
are.
Record.
Just saying.
This is only a movie.
Brokeback Mountain is the movie.
Brokeback Mountain.
Obviously. But boy, does this person have a lot of feelings.
Very intense. I wish I could quit that review about three lines in.
My favorite part is I'm too strong for that. This film is not going to get me. I'm too strong for that.
That's a great movie. I really like that movie. God is so bitter. Ugh. All right. Troy, you're up. Oh, we need to clear our throat
can't
for
think
that.
Of-
Hang on, we got to clear our throat for this? That's yeah. You got to do some Shakespearean monologue here or what?
Definitely. I can't think of any movie more overhyped than this terrible, depressing, drawn-out film where you watch an unredeeming jerk get comfortable with the idea of settling with a weird religious twist that is somehow supposed to make it better. I'll never understand it, and there are so many better films out there to watch.
Oh, that one's hard.
That one is hard. You don't have everything thrown in your face with hints.
Religious overtone, or at least religious theme. Can you read that line for me again, sir?
Yes. Terrible, depressing, drawn-out film where you watch an unredeeming jerk get comfortable with the idea of settling with a weird religious twist that is somehow supposed to make it better.
John, you like weird stuff. What do you got?
I'm stuck on settling. Settling means something.
I think it's Godzilla versus Kong.
What? Nobody settles in Godzilla versus Kong.
They settle their war.
A Marriage Story? Nope. I'm stumped.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm
either.
Stumped.
It's A Wonderful Life.
Oh.
Jesus! Settling
the dark.
Wow, what a way to look at it.
That's real freaking dark.
Wow.
Okay.
Enjoy
settling. This is very depressing.
For
but...
your family, I guess. Jesus. That's messed up.
It's all I need is right here. I mean, it is. That's the definition of settling.
I like that. Good call. All right. John?
I'm trying to figure out which one of the two for this movie I want to pick. Let me go for this one. Had been looking forward to this movie to come to Prime for months. As soon as I watched it, I should have given it a miss. Just another excuse for Hollyweird to preach to us through entertainment, quote unquote, about their political views and wrap it up as a movie. The kid who does nothing wrong and barely speaks a word is repeatedly called a Nazi and alt-right because of him being conservative and well-dressed. And the hero, quote-unquote, of the story is illegal aliens who managed to get all the fortune because, well, white people are bad. If you are left-wing, you'll love it. Anyone else will wonder, as I am, why you wasted your money on something so stupid.
Is this Jojo Rabbit?
No.
Okay.
Were there a lot of illegals in Jojo Rabbit that you recall?
Well, the Nazi thing just kind of threw me, and I was like, maybe and the kid, and I don't know.
I think I'm stumped.
And it's
again.
On Amazon Prime, so we're already reducing the amount of content to consider. Unless they paid for it.
I'm stumped. I call it. I'm stumped.
It wouldn't be Man in the High Castle.
No, it's a movie. It's a movie.
Do you want me to tell you what it is, or do you want me to
read the other review.
The first 30 minutes of this movie were really, really good. The cinematography is gorgeous, the dialogue is snappy, and the editing is engaging. But it all fell apart once the first twist revealed and redacted starts getting self-indulgent. I really don't like that he likes to have meta lines about how stupid his writing decisions are because it justifies them. For example, we get most boring car chase in cinema, and when it's all over, one character says, "That has to be the dumbest car chase I've ever seen." The detective sounds like a Foghorn Leghorn parody, and they point it out at the end of the movie as if it makes it less ridiculous. The writing gets flat out stupid sometimes. And there are scenes where the detective claims that the case is like a donut with a hole that needs to be filled with a donut hole. Our lead character can't lie unless she vomits uncontrollably. A bad movie, horrible writer.
Oh, God. I know. I freaking know it now, and I can't. It's on. I can't.
She vomits uncontrollably.
Yes, when she lies. I freaking know this, and I can't. It's obviously I don't know it, but I know it, but I don't know it.
Knives Out.
Not dirt. Damn it. That's what I. Oh, it was in my brain. Because remember, she.
You know how much I love the fact that I picked Knives Out and nobody got it?
I mean, I didn't even think. Yeah, I guess she is immigrant. There. Shame on me.
That was a good one.
Who's the. Oh, the outright.
He stumped the hose.
The Nazi boy. He sure did. Good job. Good job, John. Yeah. So good that he got up and left from his podcast.
He just left the podcast.
He just got up and left the podcast.
Mike literally dropped.
Yeah, I'm out. That's funny. All right, I'm ready for mine. Here you go. Ben ambivalent, whether or not to publish a full rant, and concluded that A, I don't have time to edit it, B, it's not worth the negativity, and C, a short description of the premise will probably convey more than enough of what's wrong with this flick. Space colonists interrupt their conquest couple's retreat when they hear a rogue transmission of Take Me Home, Country Roads, emanating from a planet with inhabitability so similar to Earth's that they plop down on said planet without their fully functioning spacesuits. Little do they know there are airborne blank on this planet. Bet they wish they had their spacesuits now, or at least gaiters, or maybe hats with better ear flaps. Things don't go well for the characters or the audience. The space crew and the blank both look like they are improvising, and it's really awkward to watch. The stakes are essentially hoping the blank will be more incompetent than the crew at any given moment. Any guesses?
Well, Starship part Troopers? Of me, life? Mm-mm. I'm trying to think of no, space it's, sci-fi it's movies. Not,
it's a sequel to Prometheus. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Prometheus 2?
Jesus. Alien versus Predator?
I'm so glad we're a movie podcast. It's not Knives Out.
Alien Covenant.
There you go. Man, it freaking pulled up IMDb. I just know it because I can see the reflection.
No, I just Googled Prometheus 2. It said there we Alien go. Covenant.
Well, see, I technically got it right. Yeah.
You did, win, yeah.
Because you are correct. Yep, you win. Alien Covenant. That's funny.
John hates that movie so much, he got up and walked away again.
He did. What is with John, you can't walk away during a podcast.
This is a podcast.
This is so weird.
It's the end of the podcast and my dog keeps on doing something weird. I got to go check on her.
Okay, that's a good way. That's a good exit strategy. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode. Come back next week. And remember, we will have an episode with Alan Ritchson, the star of Reacher, an interview with him, as well as a review of that season as its own episode. Plus, we'll have our own episode as well. Come back next week. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably from your couch, buy popcorn.